You're with SBS Radio.
Just in a nutshell, just some brief words about the overall treatment of us as Aboriginal First Nations people here in Australia by, law enforcement and the justice system. And obviously in an opinion piece, you can only write so much because you don't have 20 pages to write. So it's very brief. You know, it was just really in regards to the 17-year-old teenager and how I felt he was treated by the police officer on that day. And, you know, in that video footage, how brutal and unnecessary that looked. And, just touched on a few stats. And it was fairly brief, but just, you know, really my thoughts and feelings around that particular story and scenario with that young fella.
Yeah, this is a young fellow. I have to remind our listeners, and we saw the footage that's making the rounds on social media and in the media all over the country and the world. This teenager just being brutally swept to the ground very, very dramatically.
It was a total abuse of power from, you know, the footage online. I just feel like police officers in general are trained to de-escalate and defuse situations and certainly deal with situations that are above and beyond a mouthy teenager, so to speak. And I just felt like there's no need to just grab him when he already had his hands behind his back and then just boot his legs out from under him and shove him straight into the concrete. And, you know, it's not me condoning the profanity or use of words that the teenager was using, but it's definitely me speaking out against, you know, the way in which he was manhandled and slammed to the ground. And, you know, not just speaking out for that one particular situation, but the many stories and situations that us as First Nations people continually hear within our communities.
You had a youngster being followed just because he's wearing a Nike sweatshirt.
Yeah, that's right. I was my nephew, and he normally comes around my place once a week, and we just train and catch up, and he just randomly brought it up. He's like, do I dress gangster?
Yeah.
And I just laughed because I was like, you know, he just wears Nike hoodies and loves all that same fashion pretty much every kid his age does, you know. And I was like, nah, not really. I mean, you know, it might be classed as urban or something, but nah, you're right. Why is that? And he was like, oh, because I was walking to Coles to get groceries for Mum, and this police car drove past me and then turned around and followed me into Coles. And I went and shopped and come out of Coles, and the car was, like, waiting for me. And as I kept walking, you know, the car started moving again and drove past me. When it drove past me, I got really scared and ran and hid in an alleyway. And then I seen the car come back down the street. And I waited for it to go or whatever and walked home. And I was just really scared. And I was like, what do you sort of say in that situation when you sort of already have the gist of what's going on? And I just said, maybe they had, you know, you look similar to someone they're looking for. And it was like, yeah, right, just like any other black kid. And I was like, you know, it's really sad when you're getting these conversations with the young ones and they already know what's going on, you know.
Yeah.
We were in the lounge room last night, and the little one was there, and the George Floyd come on, and, you know, they just pick up these young ones. She was just crying like, you know, Mum, are you going to be okay? Are you going to be okay? And it's like, man, these situations, they don't just impact us as, you know, the older generations. They impact from all the way down, you know, from the oldest person to the most youngest that we don't even think comprehend what's going on, because they feel the energy in the room. They feel what's going on. They feel your energy shift and change, and they get impacted as well.
And this is the transgenerational trauma that people who haven't experienced it wouldn't know what it is all about, because they just hear the notion and they don't realize that this has gone from one generation to another and it's still happening.
And it's real. It, you know, science has proved transgenerational trauma. It is real and it's raw. And, you know, I think when we, you know, bring the conversation back to, you know, police and high incarceration rates of our people and, you know, in police officers dealing and liaising with our people, I really feel like there has to be some sort of cultural awareness, historical training that is real and authentic, that, you know, young police in the academy training to become police officers must go through, because there needs to be another level of empathy and capacity for our people when dealing with our people, because they are, you know, when that young person, you know, we obviously only seen like X amount of seconds or whatever in that clip. You know, the reality is that young person is dealing with transgenerational trauma. He's wearing the weight of the world on his shoulders because the whole world is uplifted and, you know, striving forward on this movement, Black Lives Matter, which is totally valid. But he's wearing all that, and he's also navigating his way as a young adolescent teenager, and has gone through many different emotions as well. So we're looking at someone that is dealing with so much. At this particular point in time, we've got a grown man in a uniform that is just obviously very triggering for him to be dealing with anyway. So why escalate the situation and kick his legs out from under him and now traumatise him even more? And now capacity for police officers in the system is probably like minus 20 now, and that's going to be passed on all that pain to the next generation. A lot of the comments were, you know, he got lippy, he shouldn't be talking like that, deserves what he got, all this kind of stuff. But the reality is, if that was your child, regardless of whatever race, gender, you'd be absolutely mortified and be like, wow, he's a teenager. Sure, he was mouthy and no one's condoning that, but you're a grown man that's been trained to deal with so much more than that. Yeah. And to just grab him in that hold, boot his legs from out under you with that much force and slam his face into the concrete, it just doesn't justify I was having a bad day, because I believe that's what one of the comments was from the officer, you know, he was having a bad day, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but you see what we saw, the footage we saw, and the situation with George Floyd, and we saw the same thing. We see the same thing happen over and over and over again. And this, I'm bringing my own commentary in this. There's a discourse in the community of zero tolerance to crime, but you'll find divisions. People say, "Oh, he committed a crime. He was bad mouthing the cops, or he was using fake currency." You who have worked with the cops, I'd like you to say a word or two about your interaction with the police academy.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I had a really good time at the police academy, but one thing there that, you know, was openly disclosed is that there is a gap. You know, there's a gap, and we need to close that gap, and that gap is, you know, police officers going out onto the streets with, you know, their own preconceived idea around us as Aboriginal people and minorities. But when we talk about us as Aboriginal people, you know, it's ideologies that are based upon stereotypes and not based upon the true history and setup of Australia and how that looks. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't want to acknowledge that the issues we have here, really, they stem from the minute, you know, colonisation started, and that's what a lot of the nation's been built on. And it's not me trying to be divisive, because, as you know, I'm all about unity, and I know that we all have to come together and love one another to move forward. But in order to do that, we do have to recognise the truth, because these are, you know, they've impacted my generation, they're impacting this young 17-year-old, they're impacting a lot of young generations that just shouldn't be impacted anymore. Yeah. And, you know, it's sad, it's frustrating, it's all of those things. And, you know, you see this young person, and the thing that really impacted me was just hearing him squeal. You know, he went from sort of, you know, this young 17-year-old that, you know, has got attitude that, you know, whatever, has just gone through adolescence, you know, to just this absolute young kid just squealing in agony that has just been absolutely brutalized, and, you know, it's just, no, this is going to carry all this trauma from just that one experience with the police.
Yeah.
And just keep that divide broadened. And, you know, that was the beautiful thing of going to the police academy, is the acknowledgement of that. And that was why I was brought in, was to try and share my story and things like that to help be a part of that change.
Yeah.
But obviously I'm one person. This has to be embedded in the training of the police force. For every single police officer to go through appropriate, you know, cultural, historical awareness training, to go through real statistics, to go through real footage of police brutality. And I don't know if this stuff happens, but if it does happen, then it needs to go to a whole nother level, because when we've got that police officer that kicked his legs out, he wasn't old.
Yeah.
So there's still obviously generations coming through that aren't doing the job well, and there needs to be strong and appropriate repercussions for that kind of handling as a police officer, because you do carry a lot of power. And if you were to abuse that power, then you should be stepped down or should be suspended or have to work without pay for X. You know, there has to be something there that's so severe that drives change, because it has to stop. You know, we're making up a big portion of the incarceration system.
Yeah.
And all of this has to stop. There has to be more resources brought in or something to help empower communities that are suffering and are experiencing high incarceration rates. There has to be things brought in to combat this. Yeah. You know, we've seen this a couple of years ago in the NT with the young man Dylan, you know, and the other brothers that were locked up in that juvenile detention centre. And that was absolutely brutal, what they were exposed to. That's stuff that will just, you won't, that change you forever. And this young fella, seeing everything happen in America and around the world, continually amongst us as First Nations peoples and minorities groups, it's too much now, and we need to all come together and make change together for an absolute better, magnificent future.
As a youth worker and someone working with the cops, so what do you see happening from this crisis?
Yeah, look, I'm not sure what I see happening from this crisis. We've seen it time and time again. We've marched the streets before. Obviously, this time the marches have superseded any other marches that have taken place in terms of global connectiveness and coming together.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say what are we going to see come out of this. It's really hard to say because, you know, I've seen a lot of comments. You know, if you marched for Black Lives Matter movement, well, then I'll see you on Jan 26 marching, won't I? And it's hard to say, man, because so many people jump on it as, you know, it's cool, Black Lives are cool right now. I want to jump on that and wear my mask and wear my slogan and get a picture in front of a crowd of 100,000 that I stood up for something. But I would love to know what the percentage is of people now carrying that fire and being a part of everything, you know, all the marches, all the petitions, you know, because we're not just incarcerated and dying at the hands of police. We've got some of the highest suicide rates in the world. You know, we've got some of the most highest statistics in chronic disease in certain aspects of the in the world as well. Our kids have got some of the highest rates of being removed from family still.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very layered and complex situation that we find ourselves in. And my hope is that if you marched recently, that means now you're going to dive deeper and keep gaining, deeper knowledge, keep gaining more depth in the knowledge that you know around us as first people here in Australia, because we're not just dying at the hands of the incarceration system. You know, it's way deeper and more complex than what people think. And, you know, I guess my hope would be is that everyone that marched and everyone that sat back at home and didn't march but watched everything unfold start to have real conversations in their household that lead to how can we impart in our community in a positive way? How can we be a part of change? How can we make sure our children are educated and know the truths and have greater empathy and capacity and don't just turn a blind eye? You know, maybe the police academy will say to these policemen and women before, you know, a part of the curriculum now is that in order for you to obtain your badge and go out on the street is you must go and work in a low socioeconomic community and work at a youth centre, and you have to, you know, spend 3 months there learning and gaining an understanding, you know, because maybe some people have just walked out of private schools and into a uniform, so to speak. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying private schools don't give you a great understanding, but you know what I mean? It's an example.
No, I can see if you come from,
you know, that haven't had that life experience, haven't been exposed to our situation for a lot of our families, or seen the reality, or seen police brutality, or any of that. You know, maybe they've just gone from X to Z, you know, from A to Z. Who knows? It's complex. So I just feel like there's a big lack there, and is that lack life experience?
Yeah.
You know, because if my whole itself has been built up on stereotypes, but I'm never encountered the truth.
Yeah.
And now I've been put in a high position of power. That's not really a great outcome.
Yeah. No, you're very right. And I'll actually add to that because, you know, when you come from, if you come to Australia, you wouldn't know what's happening on Indigenous people over-incarcerated, where you have really high inequalities in the country. You wouldn't know that because it's rarely properly portrayed. Even when it comes in the news, it's just one or two little lines and that's it. And end of story. These stories are really not widely covered and widely reported. And now, just to close it off, you recently penned a song that, well, it was released before this crisis, a song that's timely. Tell us about one word or two about this song and how you're really sending out a message of love and togetherness.
Yeah, I mean, we're in crazy times. And, you know, my new single, Love, it's timely because, you know, it represents love and coming together and also looking after yourself and making sure your self's nourished and that you're finding your sense of healing, connectiveness and holistic wellness. And, you know, right now with everything that's going on, I think it's very timely because it's opening up a lot of wounds for those that have obviously been victimised by police and the system. It's opened up a lot of questions. And I think it's important that right now everyone takes the time to nourish themselves so they can go back out and nourish their families and their community and be active rather than inactive. And I think love it's really pivotal right now. And my voice is a bit hectic because I've been in the studio hopefully creating more songs like Love.
Yeah, very timely one, and we're going to play it right now. Mitch Tambo, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today and about your very powerful opinion piece about the crisis you're going through now.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.